Hey everyone, it's Mark here with Failure to Comply Radio number 7. And this episode, we have a very special treat for you. We interview Brendan Small, and if you don't know who Brendan Small is, he's the creator of Home Movies, and he's also working on a new show. It's called Metalocalypse, and hope you enjoy it. I'm going to release two versions of the episode, the cut and the uncut. The uncut episode has a little mix-up we had with Brendan at the end. So you'll basically see what happened there. And so we hope you enjoy it. And keep listening. If you have any comments, email radio@ftcradio.net or comment below the post. And if you want to give us a call to comment about the show, just give us a call 1-347-328-5403. Thanks. Enjoy.
Okay, so just, I know you don't have a lot of time, so we'll just introduce ourselves. I'm Mark, and
I'm Kunmini.
And I'm Todd.
So, three people here. So,
it's going good.
Yeah. So, I know you don't have a lot of time, so we'll just get into it. And, sorry. Okay, first question. Why did you decide to make the characters on Home Movies? Sorry to rehash old stuff for you. 8 years old. So you'd say you're mostly like the Brendan Small in Home Movies that we see on the show?
What was that? I'm sorry?
You'd say that you're mostly like the Brendan Small we see on the show?
No, I don't. I mean, like, I think I am,
Maybe at that age you were.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I was a quiet, fat kid, you know? I was not a mouthy, you know, like...
Yes!
Needle-nosed, like, little rat running around all the time. I was much more quiet and annoying in my own... Quite annoying.
Okay.
I was not a loudmouth. I wasn't the fast talker. Yeah. I learned that.
It's
a put on. I never was that way.
So we're just wondering, why is your sister in the show Josie black?
Well, we actually in season 4 we give a little backstory on that. She was adopted.
Oh, I see.
It was something that happened while the parents were kind of divorcing. Like I think tried to put something together, and then the dad left right around the time everything was kind of being completed.
Okay. sorry, to cut you off there.
No, that's pretty much the story.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
This was half my question, half a friend of mine's question. Why are the main characters, the kids, wearing pajamas all the time?
I think honestly that was a thing that the art director at the time, Chris Georgiou, put together. I think it was just like everything that was done visually for Home Movies was done to satisfy conservation of animation and time.
So the simple.
So I think it might have been a little bit easier to not have to color the hand in different color.
That's true. The simple drawings on Home Movies that also came down to the art director and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, again, the simple drawings on Home Movies kind of add to the humor? Like, it doesn't have to be like, other cartoons where it has to be exactly like real life?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. I mean, I think Home Movies does look very simplistic and stuff, but, so many shows are now doing the kind of, I mean, not that we started, I mean, Space Ghost, Aquatine Hunger Force, they're all kind of like very simplistic stuff. It moves very little. South Park, you know, incredibly simplistic stuff. Having said that, I do believe that there is, I don't think the joke on the whole movie is that it looks simple. I think the joke is elsewhere. But I do think that, I think the look of the characters and the color choice and the kind of pastels and the kind of bright colors is all kind of mood-inducing. I do feel like it kind of, like, puts you at ease in some way.
Yeah. So was it your decision to end the show of home movies or the networks?
No, it was the networks. They, nobody was watching it, and I guess, and nobody had watched it at all, so they were very generous with us to give us the amount of time to be creative on kind of our own terms, so.
So, in the commentary of the DVD I was watching last night, just to kind of get a feel of Brandon Small, but you were saying you weren't making any money off any of the DVDs. Is any of that changed? Is there more people buying it? Because I know I was tuning in after the fact, after season 4 was done, so.
Right. Does that mean that I get more money? Is that what you're asking?
No, I'm just asking, are you making more money on the DVDs? Has it, like, popularized a bit more?
I think the show's probably more popular now than it was when it was on TV. I think it's the kind of thing that, like, from what I've been gauging, is that it's kind of more of a word-of-mouth thing, and that's the thing about DVDs. You can kind of watch it on your own terms, and that's what... This is the kind of show that I think you need to watch on your own terms. You can't kind of watch it or get into it based on, like, the kind of scattery airings that Adult Swim did of it, because it was never locked down to a specific time all the time. It was always kind of moving around, and this is a very specific show that you really kind of have to recalibrate your meter and learn how to watch, because it doesn't follow a normal meter, a normal kind of like a
format
time.
Yeah,
the dialogue is very kind of, you know, conversational. You have to kind of learn how to watch it.
Okay. Do you want to tell us about your new show, Metalocalypse? I think it's tied in with Death Clock. I wasn't sure. I haven't...
No, this show is actually called... You're right. It's called Metalocalypse. The band in the show is called Death Clock.
Okay.
It's a show about a heavy metal band, the biggest band in the world, and death and destruction follows them. And it's going to be very loud, and it's going to be very violent, and it's going to be very metal, and it's going to be awesome. And the look of this show is... And the tone of the show is... It's not anything like home movies at all. I mean, there is a lot of improv, and, you know, there's a lot of dry humor here and there, but it's also very grandiose, very epic, and just there's a lot of attention being paid to the look of it, the color choices, and the characters, and how they move, and how the band plays, and how the band sounds.
So, would you say the show is more music-based than comedy-based, like home movies? I know I saw a clip of it, and it was a lot of music. I'm like, okay, this is a music show, and then there was a bit of comedy, so...
Well, that's just the trailer. It's just, I mean, the style of the show is going to be, it's a comedy, you know? But it's got all kinds of different elements. I don't think there's a show I can compare it to right now that's out there, because there are very kind of grandiose, epic, dramatic moments. There are a lot of action moments, and then there's very kind of a conversational, dry humor, too.
Sorry, we're just kind of going through our questions here. We have a whole ton of sheets of paper, and we're trying to talk to each other without, you know, giving away that we are.
Oh. Oh, right. How do the drawings in Death Clock in Metalopolis, thank you, compare to those in home movies? You talked about it a little bit.
Well, I mean, this is based on, like, you know, these people are in human form, so they have the actual kind of dimensions and shapes of humans. Home movies is, you know, more cartoony. They have big noses and gigantic eyes. These guys actually have proportions of people. So when we were putting this show together, we wanted to make it look like, you know, a metal band. You know, like they're half kind of like, there's some people from, you know, two, the guitarists are from Sweden and Norway, so they kind of have that look about them. And the singers and the drummer and the bass player from the U.S. And we just wanted to make them look like they smell bad, and, you know, they,
So basically, you kind of took the part that you were trying to do with Dwayne in Home Movies and kind of make a show out of this, except different characters, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, like, in some way, yeah, but it's musically, it's going to be way, way heavier.
Yeah.
So it's going to be, but it is, like, you know, it is going to be that kind of, that silliness, that was there with Dwayne.
Okay, another question. What was it like working with some of these companies like Soup to Nuts, Show Productions, I'm not familiar with other stuff they do, but did they help? I mean, when you were making a cartoon, was it easier working with them and, you know, some of the help they can give you? Or were they sometimes bother?
Soup to Nuts was fine. I mean, everyone's fine. It doesn't matter where you do something as long as you have the right people working on it. You know, Shout Factory is just the DVD distributor, so they didn't have anything to do with the production of Home Movies. They just, they license it and they're distributing the DVD. But, like, it doesn't matter what company you work for. It's just as long as you're working with people that are incredibly creative and smart, and you find those people to work with, and hopefully they're not jerks. Also, that helps that they're very cool.
So we know you attended Berkeley. Did that make a major change in your life, or was it just something to do?
Berkeley College of Music. It was good. I learned a lot. It's the only thing that was, I went there for 4 years and graduated. It's just, the thing about learning music is, like, you learn stuff at a rate where you cannot apply it as fast as you actually learn it. Like, I could learn why John Coltrane played Giant Steps, but, and I understand that the concept makes a lot of sense, but it's going to take me 6 years to be able to do it, you know? So you learn at a rate that you don't actually, that you cannot apply. The rate that you apply it is a much slower thing. It's muscle memory and, you know, recalibrating your brains and stuff. But I liked it. I'm glad I went there. And then immediately went into comedy afterwards and kind of ignored music for a while. It was good for me to kind of, like, do Home Movies and play a bunch of sloppy, stupid music and write all that stuff and kind of not care about that, you know, about it being perfect. But it was good because the new show, I call the new show Death Clock because that was the original title. Metalocalypse was something that, you know, we had to change it to because we couldn't call it Death Clock. But Death Clock has tons of music in it. There's a lot more score. There's a lot more music is used as a lot more as a dramatic device, as a storytelling device, and plus there's, you know, tons of songs in the shows.
Okay, do you plan on going into filmmaking, or is cartoons kind of your medium that you found that's what you work with well now?
For me, I fell into cartoons. I had no idea that I would be working in cartoons. I didn't know that I'm a gigantic fan of a lot of cartoons that are superbly popular right now. I kind of like the smaller, weirder ones on Adult Swim. But it was a luck thing. I fell into it. I was doing stand-up one day in Harvard Square, and then next thing I knew, I was, you know, creating a TV show with Lauren Bouchard from Home Movies. And I feel very lucky that I get to be expressive comedically and musically. And if I can keep doing that in a way that I think I can add to, then I don't care what it is, if it's a cartoon or live action or whatever.
Okay, and I know this is such an overdone question, but where do you get the ideas for any of these shows like Metalocalypse and Home Movies? Because they just seem so genuinely funny, so...
Genuinely what?
Funny.
Oh. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Home Movies, I mean, all those stories were like... I realize, you know, and they say this everywhere, is you have to write what you know, but, in Home Movies, I would definitely take stuff out of my life. And, you know, every episode that I wrote on Home Movies, I had some very kind of, like, close connection to. Like, I remember there's an episode in season 4 called The Heart Smashers where you're trying to break up with somebody and they're kind of not letting you do it. And that happened to me, like, you know. And then and I tried to break up with someone and they kind of wouldn't let me break up with it. It was just a really awkward thing. And then,
that's your sample.
And then I think I started working out. I was noticing that I was getting fat, so I started working out. So McGurk is working out. He's overdoing it. And
oh, yeah.
He's overcompensating. So, I mean, all that stuff is in one episode, and that kind of happened to me around the same time. But, you know, you kind of
You make being cartoons about them.
But, and for Death Clock, I mean, it's just, me and Tommy, the co-creator of Death Clock, we were doing a lot of shows. He was the only one that would go see, like, hardcore metal shows with me. Nobody else in the comedy world was into it. And we started doing some sketches one night about, like, this one metal thing. I was telling my friend Chris McCulloch, who does the Venture Brothers, about the sketch. And he goes, why don't you make that a show? And I was like, oh, I think you're right. Because I actually hadn't thought of it. I was just, you know, it was too much fun for me to consider it being a TV show. So, I don't know. I mean, like, I love metal, and I grew up listening to it, and I know how to play it. So it's just kind of a no-brainer at the end of the day. Like, why don't I just make that a show?
Are any characters in home movies or a Metalocalypse based on real-life people?
Aside from yourself, obviously.
I don't think home movies really is. I mean, it's not. I mean, we kind of, like, created characters based on, like, it just kind of kept going, and we would bring in a character that would make some kind of sense just simply to the show, and I don't think I actively created anybody based on anybody.
So are there any regrets now that Home Movies is done?
My regrets were more as when it was in production. Like, on each episode, there'd be moments where I was just like, you know, we could have done that better, or we could have cut that scene, or wrote a funnier scene, or I wrote something that was going to appropriate completely, and that got on there. But, I mean, I think no matter what you do, you know, this is kind of a cliche, but, you know, nothing's ever really finished. You just kind of turn it in at some point and shrug. I really don't have any regrets, you know, for the most part, for the overall kind of body of work that the movies was, because the coolest thing in the world was that they gave us a show that we got to make on our own terms, you know, and that's a very rare thing. Like, if you guys go into show business and try to, you know, sell shows and stuff, you realize there's a lot of resistance that you're met with, and I learned that kind of, like, I knew that was happening when I, you know, I was 23 and I was doing home movies, and then I knew that this was kind of a dream job. I knew that home movies was a dream job because people were leaving us alone and letting us be creative in a very unique way. And then I go out and I sold a couple of like pilot ideas and stuff like that. But other networks, they're not like Adult Swim. You know, they want to constantly change and second guess, and they don't let the artist kind of do what. What their original intention was.
Okay, so how many people were involved in the production of Home Movies or Death Clock?
Well, it's I'm just trying to think of the credits right now. Me and Tommy, the co-creator of Death Clock, are writing it and doing most of the voices ourselves. We bring in a couple of Mark Hamill, who plays, you know, Mark Hamill from Star Wars is on the show. He does the voices. Guy named Victor Brandt. So there's like four of us, which is the main core of voices on the show. And between me and Tommy, we'll do like, you know, four or five characters per episode. Then we have the animators, which is a growing team at this point. I think we have like about maybe 16 animators, because the show's very animation heavy, unlike home movies. Then we've got like, you know, a production team of about, you know, everyone doubles up on jobs. That's how you do it over here, because there isn't a huge budget, so everyone's got to do like five or six different jobs. So the editor is also a compositor and also a director. And so, I mean, like, I think all in all, we've got probably 26 people working on the show.
So how long does it take from, like, the point where you have these ideas to getting them off to air on TV? How long does that process take for you?
I think our turnaround time for an episode is probably about a month from recording it to getting it finished, maybe a month and a half. Fast.
Yeah.
So do you think this is kind of the beginning of your career? It'll just, like, kind of keep going from here and keep doing what you're doing?
I don't know. I mean, I'd be happy. I mean, I feel incredibly lucky to have gotten to do the stuff that I've gotten to do. I mean, I think of Death Clock as the absolute ultimate dream job, because it's all about metal. It's all about comedy. It's really silly. It's going to look I just get spoiled rotten, so I don't know what the next job would be, like, that would be better than this.
So, okay, thanks for joining us on the show. It was great.
Absolutely. You guys are in Canada?
Yeah.
We're in Canada.
Ontario. Yeah, about an hour from Toronto.
Cool, guys. Well, thank you very much for even knowing about the show.
And if you have about a couple seconds, if you could do a promo for us, just say, I'm Brendan Small, and you're listening to Failure to Comply Radio.
Hi, this is Brendan Small, and you're listening to Failure to Comply Radio.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Absolutely, guys. Have a good day.
Okay, yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye.
All right.